Are you ready for some meatball?
Welcome to the Meatball Composer. We had a week off there last week, so for this show, got a double-packed, twice as much fun and excitement and interest. And yeah, so thanks so much for listening. I got two guests today. The first is James Gilliland. He is a fellow composer, fellow musician, church musician that we really have connected mostly on social media over the last few years. But we have a lot of commonalities in our backgrounds and education. So really for the first time we got to have a good conversation about stuff that he's doing, as well as some of his reflections on some of my hot sports takes. So this is a fun interview, so stay tuned for that. That'll be first up, and then after that Mark and I will talk about the upcoming baseball season, as well as the latest Bears moves, and maybe how the draft might be unfolding later this month for them. So thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this double packed twice as long episode. Yeah. So thanks, and we'll start with James. So thanks for listening.
The Bears!
The Bears!
The Bears!
I'm pleased to have on the show James Gilliland. James is a fellow musician, church musician, and we both got the same degree at Wheaton College, a few years apart. And he went to Trinity International University, which is another school very near and dear to me because of my working relationship there for 12 years. So James actually reached out to me and said, hey, can I talk to you on your show sometime? I said, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So here is James. Thanks for being here, James. It's good to see you with this Zoom thing here.
Good to see you too. Happy to be here. I have always admired your Facebook profile and your thoughts on Chicago sports and also music as well.
There's not much else rolling up around in my head besides those things. So yeah. Now I do want to talk about this really cool website that you have and kind of ministry mission thing about it. But I do remember years ago you took umbrage with a sports take I had, saying that I would trade all six Bulls titles for one more Bears championship. So what do you want to say to me about that?
Sure. I still stand by that. And you know, I think to discard the whole legacy of Michael Jordan and the six championships that the Bulls had in the 90s, that was a game changer for the NBA as a whole. And you know, they just, you know, and you posted that before they came out with the magnificent documentary series, The Last Dance. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have. It's wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to throw that all away for one more championship, you know, I don't see that as appropriate. There are plenty of other things we can trade in. I'd happily trade Blues Brothers 2000. I don't think that should have ever been made.
I never saw it, I'm sad to say.
You know, I'll trade in how good the White Sox were in the early 90s. I might even trade one of the, if it needs to be a championship, I'd trade in maybe one of the three Blackhawks championships that they recently had. But, you know, to trade away all six of the Bulls titles, turn them into the lone championship list team of Chicago, so the Bears can get a second trophy. I think I take umbrage.
I have to admit, that was very much a hot take. You know, I wanted to see what kind of reaction that would get. Like, if you're asking me objectively, would I do that or should I do that? You can't trade a dynasty. I totally get that. But yeah, I'm a bigger Bears fan than a Bulls fan. So I was, you know, just, yeah, let's see what kind of reaction this gets. So.
Yeah. Well, at my new place of employment, I had a conversation with my supervisor who is, you know, I'm sorry to say, a huge Seahawks fan.
Mm-hmm.
He said that what he finds most fascinating about Bears fans is that how much worship they give to one particular championship. And I tried to emphasize to him that, you know, the team that achieved that championship is considered one of the best teams in all the NFL to ever walk the field.
That's right.
And I don't know if that persuaded him or not, but
yeah.
I can ask what happened with Russell Wilson?
Well, apparently that was all, you know, just talk, or at least the Bears didn't have enough to offer what Seattle wanted to pull the trigger on that. So wow. Instead they said, you know what? Our number two choice is Andy Dalton. So let's sign him. Okay. And nothing against
him. I really liked the Wheel of Fortune meme about it.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. It's you'll have to see it. It's a, it looks like a Wheel of Fortune answer that could say Russell Wilson. So there's a face of anticipation, and then it shows Andy Dalton instead.
Oh, and yes. I did see that. Yes. I think it was all the blank letters, and you look like, oh yeah, this could spell Russ Wilson. And then it turns out it's Andy Dalton. I did. Okay. Yeah. It's funny. So you don't cry, you know, laugh so you don't cry. Kind
of. Yeah. Speaking of Bears, one of my biggest regrets is that I never got to go to, I still have not gone to a Bears game, much less when they had the Soldier Field that looks different than it does now.
Right. Well, hey, James, you have a background in music and you're doing a lot of stuff in music, but this, I wonder if you could talk about this website, this Diverse Church Music website that you have, and how has your musical training and experience pointed you in the direction of setting this up, and what is it exactly? I mean, I looked at the site, I saw it's run by you and two other Wheaton grads, which is very cool as a fellow Wheaton grad.
Sure.
So what is this Diverse Church Music, and what's the need for it, and what made you think that, you know what, this is something that needs to be out there?
First of all, I got into music because, well, I got into composing music, I should say, is we had a, you know, we had a piano, an old piano in our living room in Wheaton, when I grew up in Wheaton, and I started taking piano, and my mother bought me a music book called My Hamster Crawls, and what it was a collection of pieces written by 6 and 7 year old children.
Wow.
So in my little mind, I thought to myself, I want to be one of those 6 or 7 year old children that writes music and gets it published. Wow. So I started writing music, and I taught myself everything, and just from experience, I've learned how to do read lead sheets by the We Sing Christmas Carols book.
Okay.
And in my studies, I started to hear what the notes were. Like when I would play a C, you know, I'm using fixed do here. When I played a C, I thought I heard the long O vowel sound of the syllable do.
Wow.
So I didn't know, but this was called perfect pitch.
Ah.
And so I kept that composition interest with me all my life. I ended up writing something for concert band in eighth grade that they played.
Excellent.
And I had my own little Christian rock band in high school in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also, when I was in show choir band, but show choir is a big thing in Iowa, I also arranged and wrote my own part for a synthesizer.
Excellent.
And so coming to Wheaton, I tested out of all the ear training courses.
Wow.
By by early junior year. And yeah, that's where my skills in music dictation come from, all that practice, and including my education at Wheaton. There were some professors that tried to test my perfect pitch and make sure I wasn't relying on it, especially with sight singing.
Okay, how do you mean by that?
So one professor, what he did is he took a very difficult melody, asked me to sight sing it, and he played, and he said, "This is do," and what he played was not a C.
Yeah, that's so cool.
I knew that he was going to do that, so I prepared and practiced relative pitch as best I could, and then thankfully I did pass. But so yes, I went straight to Trinity after I graduated from Wheaton, and I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking about bringing my musical training to the church, and at the time, I was thinking about integrating more forms of music. But at the time, I was just thinking about bringing the classical music world where I came from with the contemporary worship world as well.
No problem, right? Easy
yeah.
peasy.
Yeah. I know, and I did find ways to bring churches together that were otherwise divided on that when I served at a church in Wisconsin. But after 4.5 years in Wisconsin, I felt called to go to serve a church in Chicago area. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to come back to Chicago area and out of Packerland.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially if you were up there. Yeah. Yeesh.
This was a multicultural church. So we're talking about 50% African American, 35 nationalities represented.
Wow.
And I wanted the music of the church to match the diversity of the congregation. So the main problem, though, is, you know, I can find songs, you know, like either through my studies and with multicultural worship leader networks, which there are a few. Mm-hmm. And they've been very helpful. So there's no problem finding songs, but what is hard is to find chord charts for songs. Mm. So, you know, you don't find, you know, like there's a worship leader in Brazil named Tito Cruz. You know, there's a, there, you know, or there's black gospel artists, or there's a really cool worship band in France called Glorious. But, you know, you can't find their chord charts for their songs, you know, like on Song Select or Praise Chart, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. The common places to find that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was one time that I was, you know, like there was a worship pastor on the East Coast of my in-laws church. She was talking to me about multicultural worship, and I was telling her about how I can't find chord charts, so I provide them for my worship team. She just said, "You should try to find a way to make money off of that."
hey, yeah.
So, in July of 2018, I have a cousin who's also Wheaton grad, Dan O'Regan. He's my cousin. You saw him on the About Us mm-hmm. section. He builds websites. He's a very talented individual, but he also builds, among his many talents, is he builds websites. And I had lunch with him at a place not too different from Mickey's.
Oh yes, that's a great hot dog place. That was a block or two away when I was a kid. We were talking about that before I hit record. So sorry, go ahead.
And I told him about what about creating a website where we provide these types of resources for worship leaders and churches interested in doing multicultural worship. You know, connect them with resources for multicultural ministry, like books and conferences, also give song ideas, and also offer transcription services. And
oh wow,
he likes the idea, and he set up the website, and I'm the regular content producer. So
excellent. Now, has it been successful? And I don't mean like in terms of financially successful, although that's nice. But I mean, like, in terms of, have you had churches coming out to you and saying, hey, you know, this has been really helpful? And the reason I ask is because we're not the American, at least evangelical church, we're not so good at the diversity thing. Have you seen success in churches doing this and implementing
Yes and no. It's we have made enough money off of the site to keep the site going. Okay. This past year, and that's good. I haven't seen a church converted, so to speak, sure, to multicultural ministry, mm-hmm, through my website, but that's not its primary purpose. Gotcha. Its primary purpose is to provide resource for churches who are interested. This church, this website has provided me with the opportunity to speak with and work with clients from all over the world. There is a member of the International Council of Ethnodoxologists that has signed me on as the regular transcriber of her songs in Jamaica.
Well, that's excellent. Wow. Congrats. Yeah.
And I've done work for clients in Indonesia, Japan, and South Africa, Holland. So yeah, a few places I've been privileged to work. But yes, I do get occasionally, still places like Milwaukee or San Diego, Canada, even also Alabama.
Wow, that's impressive. Church in Alabama, yeah. Well, that's cool. Have you been able to combine your compositional background with transcribing these songs from different countries, different cultures? Have you found yourself able to write in more varied cultural styles, I guess, is the way I
read it? With only one instance, and okay, I'm working to see if I can do more. But I only speak one language decently well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can't write in another language. I could write music,
yeah,
within another genre, but if it's going to be still in English, that that wouldn't be the best. But one thing I did do, and you might really enjoy this, and this goes back to our Chicago roots, mm-hmm, is I actually got inspired by the movie The Blues Brothers, mm-hmm, in part, to write a Christian blues song.
Oh, okay.
So yes, I call it Sons of Korah Blues.
Nice.
So what I did is I took all the psalms written by the sons of Korah, and I took all the depressing statements, and I changed them to, what I've seen as modern blues phrasing, and then I put a blues tune to it based on some of the blues tunes that I've heard, which include the ones sung by the Blues Brothers.
Nice.
And I've made a lead sheet and a chord chart for it. I would love it if somebody would be able to record it, and that might happen potentially soon.
Great. Now, kind of unrelated, I just got to ask about, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, I saw a picture of you leading music in your church from a guitar.
Yes.
Do you still do that? Because I love guitar.
I'm not currently leading worship regularly, so I do.
Okay.
But yes, the guitar was something that I decided to get. It was, it was a 2009 model, so not outdated. But yes, basically, I was regularly leading worship from behind a large stationary instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be able to engage the congregation as if I were a guitarist, but mm-hmm, still play the keyboard. And I tried to take up the guitar a few times across my life, and it never worked because, you know, keyboards and pianos do the exact opposite thing to your fingers that guitars do. You know, whenever my fingers are so soft, you know, guitar strings and frets just can cut right through.
Yeah. That makes me feel better because I've never been able to pick up guitar either. Because it just hurt. Like, I don't know, my fingers are too short, I think, and too stubby.
Well, practically, you know, I like a piano and a keyboard because it's more fun to be able to just do one thing with one finger and have a note and play a note. If you know, with a guitar, you have to hold all your fingers in certain positions to play one note or one chord, and you know, you don't need to do that with the keyboard and piano. But it was really interesting. It was actually comical because I didn't, you know, at first I wanted the church to buy one for me, and I eventually paid them off. So you know, imagine like a church finance committee meeting, you know, and I had a good relationship with the treasurer. You know, we respected each other very much. Mm-hmm. And so when I told him about wanting to get a keytar, he brought it up in the finance committee meeting. You just imagine a church finance committee meeting. They just finished talking about, okay, how are we going to afford the new bathroom tile or the new bathroom tile walls. Okay, next on the agenda, our worship pastor wants to buy an instrument from the 1980s.
I see no problem. What's the problem there? Natural transition. Well, the keytar I have, I bought in the early 90s. It was a Link LN1000, and Link is now defunct. I've looked them up because I need to replace some things, but it's just, you know, not going to be. But this thing, oh, I loved it. And I was like you, I was in a band in high school. And in the early 90s, I don't know how much you were aware of what was going on with, you know, pop music and stuff, but keyboards were quickly falling out of fashion in music. Like, you know, 80s, there are lots of synths in the 80s with all these different colors and pads and everything. And then the 90s come along with Nirvana and Pearl Jam, you know, and there's no keyboards and grunge. And so I never really got to use my keytar as much as I wanted until I started playing it in VBS, like in the early 2000s. And so that was kind of fun. And it was kitschy enough that, you know, people were like, hey, that's kind of cool. You know, that's funny. But now it seems like, you know, maybe I need to get myself another keytar for real. And one that felt neon colors on it too.
Well, yeah, when I first bought the keytar, I bought it at a store in Milwaukee. My two choices were white or black sparkle, and I chose white.
Yes.
But yes, I was, you know, I was, I'd like to say ahead of the curve because you know, whereas everybody was raising their eyebrows or laughing when I started leading worship with the guitar, you know, later became a trend. You know, like when I was working at Willow Creek a couple of years ago, one of the music directors bought himself the newest model, new even newer than my guitar, for himself. So
nice.
Yep.
Nice. Well, James, it's been nice talking to you. Is there anything else that you we could hit on or touch on with what you're doing with your website or ministry? Or
sure. Well,
any more hot sports takes too? You can throw back in my face. That's fine too.
All right. Well, as far as the website, we always love funding. We do offer subscriptions on Patreon, and with the subscriptions, you do receive a newsletter and a free chord chart, sometimes more.
Excellent.
Each month.
What's the address if people want to check it out?
Diversechurchmusic.com Or you can go to, and you can click on join/give.
Oh, okay.
Or you can go straight to patreon.com/diversechurchmusic.
Okay. Patreon.com/diversechurchmusic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And also, of course, first when someone first becomes a subscriber, I contact them and ask them if they have any questions about multicultural worship or ministry in general. If they have any particular situation that they would like some advice on, or if they want me to connect them to a resource that would be helpful. I think, you know, I have some patrons now. One is a church planter in the DC area.
Excellent.
And he's a senior pastor, and he's asked for my advice because he recently started looking to hire his own worship pastor for his multicultural church. And I told him some institutions and places to look. I have another patron is a worship leader at a multicultural church in Houston. Mm-hmm. And she had some questions about, how's she going to lead? How can she lead multicultural worship in the pandemic where everything's online and the people have been stripped down? So I helped her as well. So, you know, you get a free consultation, so to speak.
Excellent.
Do your
consultations ever involve suggesting the use of a keytar?
They do not.
Oh, okay. All right. I had to ask.
I haven't seen that, but, I haven't seen that be a strong desire in a multicultural church, but.
There's a market out there. It's untapped.
So yes, feel free, you can also go to Join Give and just give, give money. This helps us maintain the site and provide services to people across the world. And let's see here. So yes, as far as any other hot sports takes.
Take your time. I make lots of bad ones. So if any, anything about the Cubs or Blackhawks, think dumb things in it. Well, that'd be a full-time job if you kept track of any of those, I guess. All right. Well, let me ask you this. I'm a Cubs fan first, but I also like the White Sox. Like not as much, of course.
Yeah.
Is that okay in your mind? Because a lot of Chicago sports fans say, no, you have to love one and hate the other.
But I'm probably more controversial than you in this matter. Oh. Because I grew up in Wheaton and I had a very passionate White Sox fan friend from Glen Ellen who convinced me to join him in liking and cheering for the White Sox. And I didn't hate the Cubs. I just, cheered. I just cheered for the White Sox because they, they had Frank Thomas at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Lance Johnson, even Bo Jackson. Mm-hmm. I remember that year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I didn't really realize the intensity of the crosstown rivalry until I was maybe even in college.
Mm.
In the north side versus south side, I largely disregard it because at the time I'm not really a Chicago person. Sure. But then when I moved back to Chicago and started serving at that church in the North Shore,
mm-hmm.
that's when I start meeting lots of Cubs fans. Since I'm on the North Side or near the North Side in the North Shore, I'm seeing just lots and lots of passionate Cubs fans, and mm-hmm. The White Sox fans are even fewer and far between than I've ever seen in the Chicago area. So yes, I've tried to, I want to support, I do support both teams. I do want to support both teams. And I guess that's why I think I'm more controversial than you, because I've, I've been trying hard to support both teams for a while. I did have a close friend who's a hardcore Cubs and Bears fan that said that's a tall order.
Well, I have one of my sons is a White Sox fan, so that has softened any potential problems over the last 15 years or so. But I don't know. I grew up going to both games, both teams with my dad, and I lean more towards the Cubs because my family always had. But I had neighborhood friends that were White Sox fans, so it wasn't a thing. And kind of like you, it wasn't until I was older that I realized that most of the fan base hates each other. And it's the Bears that brought us all together.
The Bears and the Bulls. I guess the Blackhawks. I didn't really start cheering for them passionately until the late 2000s, and that's partially understandable because when I was growing up in Wheaton in the 90s. It was hard to watch a Blackhawks game.
My family, they weren't on TV.
They didn't. My family didn't have cable, so occasionally, my friends and I were playing the Nintendo video game Blades of Steel. someone would play a Chicago. They're like, "Oh, cool, playing a Chicago," but other than that, who are the Black? Oh yeah, Blackhawks. Okay.
Yeah, same as me. I couldn't watch them, and it wasn't until Rocky took over and started putting games on TV, and then they drafted Kane and Taves around that time. So that's when I started watching, and then 2 years later they won a cup. 3 years later, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you go to King County baseball games as a kid?
Not too many. Mostly, I think I was in high school when they started. When they had a team there, and they were originally with the Marlins, I believe, but now. I think when I left the area, they were affiliated with the Royals. You know if that's still the case. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's one thing I'm thankful for is and you can say that I'm raising my children correctly. I take my son since 2018. I've started taking my son to one Cubs game each year, nice. And obviously it couldn't happen last year, so we went to a restaurant and watched it together.
That's cool. So, that's nice.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, hey, James, I actually.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it. It was fun to talk, and let's do this down the road again. All right.
All right. Sounds good. All
right, take care. Thanks.
Bye.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again.
All right, man. How's it going, Mark? Remember, I can see the Zoom.
It's going. Oh, I got to put that middle finger away. It's going. It's going. Baseball's almost here. That's exciting. It's a good thing forward to.
And there's something extra special about this season because it's we're not post-pandemic yet, but we're doing 162 games. There are going to be fans in the stands, reduced amount. But
yeah,
this is the most I don't know if exciting is the right word, but man, I haven't longed for an opening day like this since, maybe 2016.
It was going to be an interesting and unique vibe. And baseball's kind of the first sport that gets to hopefully cash in on the post-pandemic world, hopefully by the summer, right? Where it's like, we're back to normal.
Yeah, so, I think that's what it is. It's almost like, wow, this is a huge step towards normalcy. Baseball open. It's not a 60 game season. It's the full thing, and I'm pumped for everything that means. Yeah.
Quick shout out to my buddy Brian, podcast listener, aka the guy we talk about gambling with. not us. My gambling degenerate. It's his birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday,
and
Brian!
Baseball, and I have a feeling he'll be listening to this on his birthday. So there you go.
Wow.
There's
thanks
the
for being
out.
A loyal listener.
That's right. Yeah. We ought to have a listener line. They can leave us voicemails.
Is Brian the one that's still waiting for a shirt?
Yes. Yes.
My guy, man. I gotta talk to my guy. I don't know what the deal is, but
I think cousin Nate might be too. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can get one for you too, Derek, if you're listening. No, okay. Just kidding. Well, we could. Anyway,
I got a couple, but they're like super big boy, or maybe.
Yeah, that describes me, but not so much any of them.
Yeah, and me, because I'm a big guy, like Frank.
You'll be all right.
Baseball. All right, what's baseball? The long-awaited baseball pod is here.
Yes. Yay. So. I love starting with the pandemic. I think that's a really cool point. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to go to a game. I have a wedding May 22nd, which is actually my birthday.
Yay.
And we were going to try to get tickets. And then I looked, 30% capacity. He's like, That's a wee bit much. They're crazy expensive. So not happening. But I'm still excited to have some fans. I'm still excited to have a sport I care about going again after my Fairweather Illini fandom was exposed basically immediately. And
oh, man.
Ready for the crack of the bat.
That was blown apart. Like, oh my goodness.
We didn't deserve more. The two of us anyway didn't.
No. But the fact that Loyola, embarrassed them. And then the next week after that, Loyola gets embarrassed by Oregon State.
Like, yeah, it was rough.
What is going on with these Chicago, Illinois teams, man? Woo!
It was rough.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay, I digress. Baseball. Back to baseball. So we have a unique sort of dynamic here.
Mezzo forte.
In that we are not on the same baseball page.
No, we are not. In fact,
I am a filthy cur. And also I root for the Cardinals.
No. Yes. Unrelated. Yeah, and I am a Cubs fan. But, I think I'm a unique Cubs fan in that I don't like other Cubs fans. Like, everything people say about Cubs fans, I say, yep, that's pretty accurate.
Okay, so now you're definitely tracking with my cousin. He would 100% agree with this. So I can't wait for the text tomorrow or whatever he listens.
Yeah, I hate Cubs fans. Maybe even more than Bears fans. I don't know. It's close.
It's tough.
It's seriously, I don't think
how the fans are. I'm kind of the same way, I guess. I hate the best fans in baseball thing. I enjoy when they give standing ovations to Albert Pujols when he returns and do that kind of cool stuff. Yeah, and like the great. First home game for Arenado, his first at bat's going to be like it's going to sound like it's at max capacity. That's cool, but the rest of that shtick I think is like really annoying. And the fans don't actually really do it. That was thrown on us by the media. Mm. But Cardinals fans can just be totally ungrateful for the success they've had.
Mm. Best team in the National League history.
Yeah. Still competitive, 20 years running, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I don't always love all the offseason moves, and Mo can be kind of annoying when he doesn't do anything, and we all kind of get critical of our teams in the offseason, but we have it very good as baseball fans in terms of the Cardinals. And it'd be nice if people could just kind of chill out and appreciate that.
From my perspective, it seems like the Cardinals, either win the Central or when I was a kid, the National League East back in the day, or they're like second place. I mean, that's like always.
They're like never last anymore.
No. Almost like the Packers of baseball.
They kind of are. How dare you
wear that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but
pretty accurate.
And when I was little, I don't know if I've ever publicly admitted this before though.
Oh,
I actually kind of liked the Cardinals when I was a kid.
Come on to the dark side.
Because now I'm talking like 85 to 88.
Okay, but that's like not fair weather at all.
The Cubs were doing nothing, and the Cubs played them a lot. But here's how every Cardinals game from that era I remember: Vince Coleman's up to bat, and he walks, and then he steals second while Willie McGee's up, and then he steals third while Willie McGee's up, and then Willie McGee just like punches a little single to the left field, and Vince Coleman scores. That was like every Cardinals game.
I'm convinced the Whitey Herzog Cardinals would either be horrible in the modern era, because of their lack of power, or they'd kill everyone because of everyone's lack of defense. They just constantly put the ball in play and wear everybody out and refuse to strike out 3,000 times like the rest of the baseball leagues, both leagues do, and they'd be great. I don't know which one it would be, but they were a singularly unique team at this point.
Yeah,
it'd be kind of cool to have a team like that now, just for kicks. I'd hate watching it without the home runs, but less strikeouts would be nice.
One of the great baseball names of all time in Joaquin Andujar.
Oh, yeah. He was crazy, too. Immortalized by The Simpsons.
Really?
Remember, that was the guy who Milhouse pretended he was going to be when he and Bart were playing in one episode. It's like, I'm Joaquin Andujar. And it's like, who? I'm pretty sure. A different Buddy Brian would know. And I will send him this and he will let me know.
So I was actually in 1985, Bears. I was actually disappointed that the Cardinals lost to the Royals in the World Series. Mm-hmm. Young 8-year-old meatball composer.
So my Cardinal fandom goes back to that time, mostly because of my older brother. My sister and grandma and cousins are all Cubs fans. And I remember watching Cubs games with my grandma all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she passed in 98, the year they finally went back to the playoffs. She hated Harry Carey because she thought he was a dirty old creep. Which
I never liked Harry Carey.
Is not inaccurate. But I never have had a hatred for the Cubs like Cardinals fans are supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So Bears-Packers thing, very different for me, if you want to return to that in this context. Like I always wanted the Cubs to do well if the Cardinals are out of it, and otherwise they're my rivals. But like when the Cubs won in 16, I was all on board just for all the people I know who had been waiting their whole lives for it. And because my grandma thinking about watching all those games with her, because that was in the day when WGN gave them a national audience that most teams didn't have. And for the Cardinals, it was the radio that got them a national audience back in the 60s and whatever. So they have kind of some similarities there in their national appeal being media, and access.
Mm-hmm.
The teams I hate are the Astros and the Reds, and here lately the Brewers.
Oh yeah, the Brewers. They're kind of becoming. They're like the pimple that won't go away, you know.
Yeah, they're like an ingrown hair that you just can't get the root out.
Yeah.
And so maybe that brings us to finally talking about the upcoming season.
Yes.
I think the Brewers are the other contender in the division if they can pitch enough. What did you think of the Cubs offseason? I'm sorry to bring up bitter memories, but I don't know where else to start. We have to start there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really disappointed that we're going into this year with Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez all in their last years, That just kind of tells me that it's Baez or Contreras? No, it's Baez, I think. That all three of them won't be back after this year.
Well, you can't possibly get them all back, yeah.
Yeah. So that's like, okay, well, who's going to go? Now, obviously, for me, Chris Bryant is my favorite Cub since Ryne Sandberg.
And your daughter's, as I remember.
And my daughter's favorite, yes. KB, Handsome Eyes, yeah, all that. But the way the fans have turned on him, I don't blame him if he would want to get out of here. I still don't understand why. It's like the fans hate him for not winning MVP every year or something. It's bizarre.
How dare he have a historic start to his career culminating in a World Series?
Well, that's the thing. His career OPS is still like above 850, I think. I mean, that's still on a Hall of Fame trajectory. It's probably not as certain as it was his first couple of years, but if he gets back to what he was doing those first
the whole three, question years, with him is will he get and stay healthy?
I guess, yeah.
And yeah, so how many of them are going to be on the Nationals is what I'm hearing, since apparently that's where old Cubs go.
Yeah.
And Brian's still linked to them, isn't he? Or he was for a little bit there.
I don't know. I mean, he's yeah, I could see that happening, but gosh, I hope not, because I just think he's a good dude and a great player. He had one off year last year, and I mean, how can you base anything off of what happened last year? But
and we all know there are no good dudes in Washington.
That's absolutely clear. Yeah.
Yeah. So is it a good sign or a bad sign that they started apparently with Rizzo, but I haven't gotten anywhere? I saw where they basically offered him what Chris Carpenter makes. which Chris Carpenter is going to be one of the worst players in baseball if his spring continues into the season. But he is making like $20 million. Is that unreasonable of the Cubs?
What was it? 5 years, $70 million. Is that what they were?
Yeah, and I'm sure he wants 100 or something.
Yeah, I was surprised it was that low. But then you got to remember that you pay for what you expect to get out of the player.
Yeah, it's not a legacy thing.
Yeah, exactly. So
how old is he? Is he 30 now?
I think he is 31, 30.
Which is around when the Cardinals extended Carpenter, who's got like one more year in, and they can't get rid of him. And it's probably the worst extension they've given out under Mozeliak.
Yeah.
He's done other dumb moves. Some of the trades were disasters, but like in terms of just like way overpaying one of his own. So maybe the Cubs are being wise there, but that sure sounds like it's going to not end well.
I know. I'm pessimistic. Now, Jed Hoyer, the new president of operations, did say today that he's confident something will get done before the season's end. But
I see this like in very generic form, like score articles with comments or Facebook comment, you know, but like people seem to consider him the face of the team, not Baez or Bryant, even though they're probably the better value moving forward.
I think, yeah, and I think that's a sentimental thing because
for sure.
Rizzo was the first piece that came over that to help build the World Series team. But yeah, I mean, he's not the best player. He's a solid player, very solid player. I hope he can.
He's the one that kills the Cardinals in my mind.
Mm.
But I would definitely say the other two are more valuable.
Yeah.
Although his defense is great, but 31 and, you know, those thick lower body guys, you just never know how they're going to age.
And he is 31. I just double checked.
Yeah.
He'll be 32.
Great defensively. I just, if the DH happens, how much does that help the cause for the Cubs keeping him, do you think?
Well, I don't know if you say his bat is really what makes him so valuable. I mean, like you said.
What's his bat worth?
Yeah, he's a great defender. He is. He's one of the best first basemen in baseball. So I don't know if the DH in the National League would really do much for that.
I'd have to crunch the numbers. He's a plus-plus defender. Is he even a plus bat at that position at this point? Or is he just kind of a normal bat at that position?
That's a good I haven't looked, but he's probably above average among first basemen. That would be my guess.
I feel like
I'm not sure.
That gets me to another point. I came kind unprepared. Of a side point. No, you're good. Like, what can we even make of last year? Like, if I want to look up his wins above replacement, is there any point even doing 2019 or 2020?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so. It was 60
don't
games.
You want to go back to 19? But then it's like, okay, but that is 2 years of aging. So like, how valuable is that? The point is GMs are in a really weird spot trying to figure this out.
Yeah. That's a good point. Now when you look
on FanGraphs, if you just look at by the team, which is the first thing I can pull up, 2019 first base positional war by team, which of course first basemen pretty much play every day. Atlanta, St. Louis, Chicago are your top three in baseball.
There you go. Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's still that player, he's worth way more than what they offered. And the big question is, how many years is he still that player, if any?
Yeah. So, how good would he be at 36 when this five-year deal would expire?
Yeah. Can you do it without a no-trade clause, without having one, so that you can move him if you want to? His numbers in 2019 were 279 average, 384 on base, 500 slug with a 4.3 WAR. For context, that's almost identical to Paul Goldschmidt and a bit behind Freddie Freeman.
Okay. Yeah, so he's still one of the better first basemen.
And a tiny bit better than Votto. Like, would we say Votto's a plus bat? Absolutely. Yeah. So he's a plus bat.
Yeah.
But for how long? So that's a tough call. I feel like Baez is the one that would be the obvious moving forward value, but maybe he's the one who breaks the bank too much.
You know, maybe, but you know, I think among Cubs fans, I'm in the minority that I like Baez. He's very entertaining, makes those circus tags, you know, at second base, but his bat, he's just so inconsistent and he's a strikeout machine that I don't know. I'm just not as wowed with Baez as most other Cubs fans seem to be.
Does playing short matter in this equation versus second?
Well, I mean, when they won it all, he was a second baseman. I guess
18 was 18 the year he went crazy. 18 was his stud year.
Yeah,
right?
18 he was runner up for MVP. Yeah.
Yeah. See, maybe he's not the best value moving forward. I'm not enough of a follower of the team to.
I still think Chris Bryant is, but maybe
chats about him.
Maybe
was that season too much of an anomaly for Baez?
Well, that's the thing. Some people thought, oh, he's arriving now or he's coming into his own, but. No, after that 19, he was closer to his league averages, and then last year he was. But again, can't read too much into 2020. But it was not. Yeah, I think a lot of people. I was gonna say, I think a lot of people love the idea of Baez being this magician, and you know he was in 2016. He was the MVP of the NLDS and the NLCS. Like they don't get to the World Series without him. In 2016, but going forward, you know, looking ahead, and of those three guys, I still think Chris Bryant is the guy that has the most promise going forward.
But if he's healthy, the point of all this, the reason I wanted to get into this is one of my two big talking points is the Cubs are in a real bind here because none of these guys somehow are clear-cut winners in this. Which one or two do you keep? Like it's surprisingly difficult. It looked like this was going to be like a dynasty and they were going to keep everybody around and all that. And then now, you know, why are they trading you Darvish?
Yep. Money? To restock the shelves. I think just to get more players. I mean, their farm system was...
I guess they sold high, maybe is the logic. But they're a worse team on paper than they were, yes?
Yeah, I think so.
Unless they all bounce back offensively because of the pitching.
Yeah.
All right,
they can't all be that bad again. That's another thing.
offensively, you would assume somebody's good again out of that trio. Mm-hmm. Is Contreras the guy you keep? Or I think they have him for 2 years yet, right?
I think you keep a young, talented catcher.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's one of the best couple catchers in the game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a game I wanted to play.
Yes.
Which team does this describe? Cardinals or Cubs? Really good infield.
Well, now Cardinals, because of that third baseman you just got.
That Nolan fella.
Yeah.
Does it still describe the Cubs as well? I guess you can pick both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I would lean towards the Cardinals because of those corners, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess I would too, but it kind of depends on Baez at that point, because you could get way more out of Baez than the Cardinals could out of their middle infielders. Mm-hmm. But theirs are still solid. All right, questionable outfield.
Yeah, for Cubs for sure.
Cards for sure as well.
Interesting.
They got a top prospect that everybody's counting on, who I really like, but I mean, still prospects, you know, the deal.
I think I see where you're going, my friend.
Questionable starting pitching.
Yes.
Sadly enough, this is my fault for my Russell Wilson jokes. If he joined the Bears, where would he fit in the Cubs rotation? Then the Cardinals had two starters get hurt. So there's... Oh. They have a lot of prospects, but they're a little thin there at the moment. And I think Miles Michaelis is going to be done for the year any day now. They've already lost Hudson last year for this year. Nice. And now KK, the Korean lefty, who they were counting on, had a really nice year last year. He's hurt too, but 10-day DL, so I'm a little less worried about him. But mm-hmm. their rotation, in case you are not aware or listeners aren't, is Jack Flaherty, who's the Javier Baez at the Cardinals staff right now, like was 2019's Cy Young level play a mirage or not? Cause he was so bad last year, but again, who cares about last year? Had an iffy spring, but most people think he's just working through new pitches and it doesn't really matter. Adam Wainwright, who somehow remains effective and just continues to rack up the wins and go seven innings, keep hitters guessing. And then Carlos Martinez, who's a total head case. Most people wanted the Cardinals to cut him. Tons of talent, but he's never managed to put it together upstairs. John Gant, who's an effective reliever that they're starting. So who knows how that goes. And Daniel Ponce de Leon, a younger guy who's now, I think, 26. He's not that young anymore by baseball standards. Electric stuff, walks everybody. There's no way he gets through lineups three times. So my point is, I think they've come back to the pack a little bit in the Central after what's developed this spring.
Yeah.
Still, yeah, I think the favorites.
The Cardinals?
Yeah. I think they have the most overall talent right now.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of Cubs fans are thrilled, like, Jake Arrieta's back. But, you know, he's 6 years removed from his Cy Young season. And I think Cubs fans have a real problem with, you know, realizing little things like that. Like, Jake Arrieta is not going to be the Jake Arrieta of 15 and 16.
Or he would still be a Philly.
Right.
Yep. Okay, I got one more. Bullpen. Really good bullpen. Which, does that describe the Cubs at all?
No.
Therein lies the Cardinals' advantage. It's kind of the point of the exercise. The bullpen for the Cardinals is, again, the bullpens are volatile and it's just on paper, but man, it's nasty. They got fireballers on both sides. They got junky old lefties that irritate everybody by getting people out that they don't have any business getting out. They've got young studs who might end up having to start occasionally. Jordan Hicks is back throwing 102 miles an hour again. Woo. Bullpen will hopefully sustain a rotation that doesn't go deep into games without itself wearing down. Mm-hmm. And the division is just not great.
Yeah. The Cubs are still relying on Craig Kimbrell to be the closer. And the last time I checked his spring training numbers, and you know, you shouldn't put much stock in spring training numbers.
No, I don't even bother
his ERA is in the double digits. Okay.
Color me surprised.
I know, he's just picking up where he left off. And he's like the one fireballer that I can think of in the bullpen. Like, the Kyle Hendricks is going to be the Cubs opening day starter tomorrow. Or today, depending on when you're
and he's easily your best pitcher, and I feel like the rotation might be Kyle Hendricks deep.
Is that too
harsh? I'm coming from afar here.
No. I think that's spot on, and I think that the kind of pitcher he is really emblematic of the fact that the Cubs pitching staff in general is going to be. So they don't have anyone who can throw a good fastball over the plate. Or at least, you know, not right down the middle of the plate.
Are they doing a New England Patriots zig while everyone else zags by having a bunch of soft tossing starters, or are they just doomed to get figured out?
Well, if I can't imagine they did that was their plan to do that. Like, oh, we're going to get these finesse pitchers, we want to go for five Greg Maddoxes on the team.
Who was the guy on Arizona that was really good the year they beat the Yankees out of nowhere? He was a soft tosser, but it's because they did Randy Johnson, him, Kurt Schilling. And like, he was just like throwing like 85 miles an hour in between the two of them.
I remember
confounding everyone, and they would make Schilling's fastball look like Johnson's and made him better.
That is interesting. I mean, I can't remember who that was.
Nope. To the Google machine. Speaking of, have you fulfilled your baseball obligation to this podcast and checked Pirates Twitter yet?
No.
That's the equivalent, right?
That was my... Yeah, that is a good equivalent. No, I have not. Are there Pirates fans?
Is it even worse than the Lions? Like, do the Lions have more hope at this point?
Yeah. Who's on the Pirates even?
They have a third baseman that's really good. He's a prospect. I don't even remember his name. I honestly don't know if I can name another Pirate. Do they still have Marte, or did they do something to get rid of him?
I don't even know. That's a good question. I don't know. I never really think of it. Even when they're on the schedule, like, okay, the Cubs are going to win two out of three. Okay.
Armando Reynoso. That was the pitcher I was looking for. He with his 5.98 ERA. But he was good in the playoffs because people were like confused trying to face him. Anyway,
there you go. You can't get
Reynoso anywhere else.
That's right.
Okay, so we got to do Pirates Twitter. I think we've established.
Okay.
I'm gonna go to the Pirates Reddit.
All right. I'll be prepared next time.
Okay.
But you don't hear any stereotypes about Pirates fans, do you? I mean,
no.
They're probably all depressed.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL's sheer parity and salary cap give the Lions fans by default more hope, right?
Yep. I mean, the Pirates last made the playoffs in 15, and they played the Cubs in a wild card playoff.
So when I put pirates in the Reddit search bar, so much comes up that's not the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think are they the Buccos? Got to watch it with that one. Yes, they're the Buccos on Reddit. All right, how many members do you think their Reddit has? For context, the Bears have like 125,000 members.
All right, I'm going to guess the Pittsburgh Pirates have like 17,000.
Not bad, 24,000.
Wow, okay, all right. Good on you, Pittsburgh. I'm impressed.
The thing they're most happy about is Roberto Clemente being playable in the new baseball game, MLB 21 The Show.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that is cool.
And AJ Burnett saying he should have never left Pittsburgh.
What about
they're not really all that depressed though. They just kind of are all accepting of their fate.
Man, but there's like no way out of that.
No. How about maybe the Reds are more ragey? Lions Twitter and Reddit is amazing because of how well they mock their own team and just take it on the chin with the whole, you know, doormat of the division thing, and then they give you that head coach. It's going to be tough to top what the Lions give us.
And the opposite is what made Lions Twitter so interesting and special. It was because they talked like they were the Packers, you know, the fans.
Maybe you should do the Brewers. They probably have a high opinion of themselves.
Yeah, I think they do.
They got that Packers stank. So do you agree the Cardinals are the best team in the division?
Reluctantly, yeah. Reluctantly.
Who's second?
Cubs.
Over the Brewers?
Yeah.
Hey, Christian Yelich was terrible last year. If it means anything, I'll take that one being what it means. Yeah. That one there where Yelich was bad. Let's do that again. Instead of channeling his inner Barry Bonds.
And I think that because what I said before, I don't think the Rizzo, Baez, Bryant triad or trinity struggles like they did last year. All three of them.
Somewhere there's a Brewers fan saying the same thing about Yelich. Probably accurately.
Okay, but that's one.
I still hope they can't pitch.
Yeah.
All right, so there is a little bit of Bears news, right?
Yeah, talk a little Bears before we get out of here.
Or do we want to do any season predictions to embarrass ourselves with later?
For baseball?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? How about you just do a Cardinals and I do a Cubs prediction?
Okay, I predict the Cardinals will win the division for the first time in forever. They will make a decent mid-season move to acquire a starting pitcher, which they haven't been aggressive at that time of the year in a while. And I have no idea how to predict the playoffs because it's practically the NCAA tournament at some years. And then, you know, sometimes it's chalk like last year. But yeah. I say they will win the division fairly comfortably, not like, you know, some crazy race, but not a total blowout either. And then lose to one of the vastly superior teams in the NL West. Bold.
The NL West, that's going to, yeah.
Hot take.
You know how the playoffs are going? Are they going to do the same eight teams?
I think they're going back to the normal setup.
Okay, all right.
But then they were talking about how they could still pass through changes today to the season, which is like, hello, it's tomorrow.
Right.
So, like, it's been kind of tricky to follow.
I'll get a tweet at 11:59. National League doing the DH.
And I think I'll say, just for sentimentality, that Nolan Arenado's numbers don't take as much of a hit as people think. Maybe just the home runs a bit, but he'll still have a great year offensively once he settles in.
There's typically a free agent dip, right? So
yeah,
maybe the first half of the season, and then by the second half,
everyone's like, the Coors effect. Yeah, but it also makes them terrible on the road because they don't see enough curveballs at home that actually work. So they're like, have to readjust every road trip is one of the theories. I think that's kind of interesting.
Bringing a little science into this.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
All right, your turn. Right, Cubs.
I think that I'm going to say the Cubs win between 85 games. That's my.
Why are you getting precise? I'll take the Cardinals to win 90, low 90s, 91, low 90, okay. Something like that.
Yeah, that's probably plenty to win the division. And I don't, if there's only six playoff teams, maybe the Cubs, but I don't know. I could see them missing the playoffs with, you know, an 85 win season. So okay. If they somehow squeak in, yay. But I think it's no secret that the Cubs are rebuilding. That's just, you know, a fact. And who are they going to keep to be like the savvy veterans when the next crop of young
it's a strange year. They're kind of rebuilding and also trying to get one last hurrah.
Yeah, and that won't work.
Yeah, no.
You got to do one or the other. You can't try to do both.
True. See, also the Bears every freaking year. except for 2018. God bless it.
Bears.
World Series prediction. Sure to go wrong.
White Sox, Dodgers.
Well, if you pick chalk, never mind on sure to go wrong. Goodness. Real bold. No, I'm just kidding. Dodgers are loaded. It's hard to pick against them. Just to be different, I'll pick the Padres so that Fernando Tatis Jr. can become a villain because soon everyone will turn on him. And it'll be the all youthful fun World Series, which I fall for every year and never actually happens. So I'll stick with your Sox.
Yeah. And, you know, as a Chicago fan,
Tony La Russa back in the World Series.
Oh, my gosh. That's.
You know, I know you're a Sox fan too. Let's
not shut up. I'm not a White Sox, but I'm not. Well, here. The
you're
White
not
Sox,
a hater, which you
they're my
be.
Second favorite Major League Baseball team. How's that?
That's fine.
The White Sox. Okay.
Okay. Bears.
Only because of that Chicago on the jersey. Yes, Bears. Speaking of Chicago, Bears. We've got a 17 game schedule that the Bears are going to play.
Are the Bears more of an 8-9 or 9-8? This really throws me off. Now what's the new ultimate nightmare record for purgatory in the NFL?
It's like 8.5 wins. That's the line.
8-8-1, my friend.
I'm surprised this happened. I thought if
it happened
they added
rather
more
quickly.
Games, yeah, I thought it would go to 18 just to keep an even number because they let's see, it was 14. Through the 70s,
into the 76 or 78 or something, they switched it to 16.
Yeah, so I thought 18 would be the next one, but 17, okay.
Can the Bears finally get a 4,000 yard passer
with Andy Dalton?
No, maybe. Who knows?
Andy Dalton no. Is what is he 30? No, no 31. He's 31. Oh, he's Rizzo's age. Wow. No.
Yeah, Rizzo should be the Bears quarterback. I don't know why they don't see it with Theo as the GM.
And the reason they're not going to do it is because Matt Nagy is still calling plays and he still thinks that, a quick out to Darnell Mooney is like getting a quick out to Tyreek Hill.
True. And we love you, Mooney.
I do love Mooney.
I joked with my cousin, you could give the Bears 25 game season and they still wouldn't get to 4,000 yards
passing.
Yeah, I just had to. Sorry.
Ouch.
Did you see where the Bears were the only franchise to vote against it? All the other owners are like, yay, more money. And the Bears are like, no, we're traditionalists.
Do you guys realize this gets you more money? Oh. Yeah, maybe they voted no because there were 16 games when we won in 1985.
They voted no because they don't want to be like, and the Bears never had a 4,000-yard passer during the 16 game.
Oh, that is true.
Oh, their pride is wounded.
Ooh.
Gosh,
who came closest? Eric Kramer? Is he the?
Yeah, he was right there.
Single
too.
Season leader. Yeah.
Yep. Ronnie almost had the guy.
Oh.
That's just hard to believe.
You know, Eric Kramer, he good quarterback, but I want to give Rick Meyer a try.
Let me pour another one out for Eric.
Those were dark days.
Let's point this out. Yeah. There still is nothing Ryan Pace has done. On its own, not necessarily with hindsight or anything else, that was dumber than giving a first-round pick to Rick Meyer, who had already proven beyond all doubt that he was absolutely terrible.
That's a very good point.
Mitch Trubisky's worst year has absolutely nothing on the year Meyer had before he became a Bear, where he threw 12 TDs and 20 interceptions, I believe. And they gave a first for that.
Yeah.
Madness. We've lived through worse, Bears fans.
I don't even
somehow think, we have lived through worse.
I don't think Meyer even threw a touchdown as the Bears quarterback.
I don't think he did either.
That's not amazing.
Worth me looking up, so it ain't happening.
No, don't. Yeah. Don't.
Was there another move? I think there was some roster filling in. Was there anything else? Well, thank goodness we've got all the special teams back, and Dan Bernstein can rest easy now that the punter, the placeholder. I mean, he's both. The kicker and the long snapper are all back. I remember a day where he was raging on the radio about this. I'm like, they'll get the special teams back. Chill out. That's not something you prioritize.
But not Patterson, though, right? Patterson's still...
CP is gone. He liked a tweet about joining Green Bay, but he hasn't joined anywhere yet.
Oh, don't do that.
There's Packers news.
Ooh.
Mark Murphy, their president of, you know, socialist ran Green Bay or whatever they are. He would refuse to give an update on Aaron Rodgers' contract status or talks to restructure negotiate. So now everyone's like, he's totally leaving after this year. Like, this is like the last hurrah is what everyone's saying. Not that anyone really knows.
Why would you push that?
Ton of cap problems the next year. Like, they could definitely have one more go and rebuild. It wouldn't surprise anybody. There's some good news.
How do you push that guy out the door? How do you do it?
I don't really
I'm grateful.
Know.
I'm grateful. But
like, spoiled rotten, right? Back to that point we were trying to talk about with the Cardinals a little bit. Like, the Bears getting a QB that good for that long, like, we'd be wheeling him out there while he's in hospice, you know? Like, I don't think that would be the way it goes.
Yeah. So 17
that's
games.
That's their scuttlebutt.
I see the Bears as a solid 8-9 team, my friend.
Yeah. The Raiders is our new bonus game.
Is it?
Packers get the Chiefs.
Hey, nice.
That makes me happy. Yeah. Go 17 game season for this year.
All right. Hey, I don't know if you saw about a week ago, I shared my theory on the Bears drafting Mac Jones. Did you see that? You saw that.
I did see that.
All right. Let me.
A lot has changed since then in the Mac Jones world.
A lot has changed. That's why I wanted to bring this up again. But first, my thinking was they're going to draft Mac Jones because he's probably the number – well, he is the fourth best out of that crop and probably
– or fifth or third or no one seems to agree anymore.
And he is the anti-Mitch. That's my
– he was more likely to be there at 20 at the time of your post.
Correct.
10-ish days ago.
And what were Mitch's weakest qualities?
Oh, for sure. Reading the defense and accuracy.
And those are two of Mac Jones' strengths.
Yes, I've told several people I would take Mac Jones because of that.
So my
even though he's limited otherwise. So I'm
right. Yeah. Well, that's another thing, though. Mitch,
but I'm not trading up for him.
Mitch has all these athletic abilities, and he's, you know, he can run, escape ability. Mac Jones doesn't have that. So my theory was that Ryan Pace would pick Mac Jones based on the fact that he's the anti-Mitch, not based on the fact of what he could be as an NFL quarterback. Because, you know, we don't know. We never know these things.
No, right? We never know.
Yeah, except Patrick Mahomes, we all knew he would be.
Yeah, that's why he went 10th. When if you do a redo of the last 20 drafts, he'd go number one.
But as you said, as you pointed out, the Mac Jones stuff has taken on a new direction. The scuttlebutt, if you will. That's a great word, by the way.
Two times we've dropped that in the pod today. Where else can you get double scuttle?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you dropped it earlier. That's why I, you know, wanted to, yeah. But now the rumor is that, okay, the 49ers just traded up, gave up three first-round draft picks, right, to move up to the number three pick in this year's draft. Is that right?
Yes.
Right?
Has any team ever moved up for the third QB picked with that kind of draft capital?
No.
Like, this is kind of a wild trade.
And that seems insane. But anyway, it's even more insane by the rumors out there that they're doing it because John Lynch wants Mac Jones for the 49ers.
For all the John Lynch won the Mitch Trubisky trade, how's Solomon Thomas turned out?
That's right.
They didn't get anything out of that trade either. So I don't know why everyone thinks he's such a genius. He basically inherited a really good young defense and was smart enough to hire a good young coach, which is maybe more than our GM's done. But okay. I think it's 50-50. They totally screw this up. Jones third overall would be pretty insane.
That's what I don't get. I mean,
smokescreen.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Is this just, screwing up the works out there, and is this misdirection?
Is Mac Jones their draft version of Mike Glennon? Is that what you're asking? Maybe that's really convoluted. I think it could be a smokescreen. Justin Fields just ran a 4.4-something 40.
Ooh.
He was the number two prospect in this class for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And Zach Wilson's fun. He had a pretty awesome pro day too, so I'm not going to knock him. But like the idea that Fields would suddenly be like the fourth or fifth QB. Because of the Northwestern game, they had 300 yards rushing. And then he killed Clemson. And then he lost to Bama, you know, like everyone else always does.
Yeah, you can't vote them for
that. And I don't know what to think of his ability to read or feel. I don't know enough about him. I haven't really scouted these guys because I don't think any of those guys are realistic for the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
But it is weird to think that Mac Jones, so limited athletically by comparison, has suddenly leapfrogged Fields. I could see him leapfrogging Trey Lance, the kid from North Dakota State, because North Dakota State.
Right.
Limited tape, and they only played one game all year because of COVID. Like, there's a lot of red flags there. He's an electric athlete too. But for Mac Jones to surpass him is a huge ascension. I mean, he crushed it at Bama. I know they had a ton of talent, but he always put the ball exactly where it needed to be, it seemed like. His pro day was not that great, though.
No?
He ran a 4.8 40, so he's not a total slouch, but.
Yeah, it's faster than I could do.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
That's slower than Brian Urlacher or five.
Third overall. I mean, no matter who they pick, I can't get over the idea that you traded that much draft capital to get the third QB off the board, which, of course, recently that was even someone like Allen and someone like Deshaun Watson before he went all Bill Cosby on everyone.
Yeah.
That was great value. Oh, so maybe there is something to it, but it just seems weird to move that high this early.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. Why don't you wait to see how the board looks? And
I don't think it's for Mac Jones. I really don't. I think this is all.
Smokescreen would make the most sense. Yeah. Justin Fields would make more sense as far as ability. But, you know, everyone's like, well, you know, Kyle Shanahan loves him, some Kirk Cousins, and maybe Mac Jones is the Kirk Cousins of this draft. And I'm like, you don't trade 3 first-round picks for Kirk Cousins.
No, though. You don't. Who was
like, you can draft him in the first round. That's fine.
Yeah.
Even though he was like a 6th-rounder, but he's obviously better than his draft slot was. Mm-hmm. What is he, the 2nd or 3rd best probably in his draft class at this point? It's like Andrew Luck was better, and I don't know if anyone else was even better. What draft class was Wilson in? Was Wilson in that one? Because he'd obviously be
Wilson
way better.
Wilson was 2012?
12? Yeah, and I thought this Cousins was a year before.
Maybe.
Or after, I mean. Anyway, it was the RG3 draft, because remember the Redskins picked 2 QBs even after moving up for RG3, and then that actually was smart somehow. The draft is just going to be crazy. People are now talking about like 4 QBs going to top 4, maybe even 5, and I'm like, this is crazy.
Who would be the? Who would you take 5th?
They'd take the North Dakota State
with the
kid.
Number 5. No, that would be
see. Foolish. I think the media is just losing their minds.
Yeah,
and I'm go for it. That means a really good player is going to fall to the Bears at a position they need. And I'm thinking more long term here because I don't have much hope for next year, short of a Russell Wilson trade anyway. Don't reach for a QB at 20.
No,
get your tackle,
yes,
and get your QB next year if you can't get one now,
or take a later round,
or take a second,
QB.
Third round.
Yeah, like I heard Hogan
I'd much
Johns.
Rather have Trask or Mond. In
that's
the
who Hogan
or
Johns
third
were talking about. Yeah.
Than trading up for a Mac Jones. That would scare me.
I don't know. Keller Mond.
I know
Mond
he's better than they are, but I don't want to give up a future pick.
Right. Yeah.
For a question mark.
Keller Mond seems like he's that guy who could be like really good in the NFL, and I have no reason to say why. Just like.
Have you seen his receivers? They were terrible.
I have not.
I can give you that reason. He played with some trash wide receivers.
Well, it sounds like a natural.
He didn't play with a top 10 talent tight end like Trask did.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, we snuck some Bears into the baseball pod, as we inevitably must.
And we are in draft month, so we will have to have a good draft show pretty soon.
We'll vet the guys a little better.
Yeah. And next time we talk, let's see how we feel about our baseball predictions.
All right.
Nothing like later, evaluating 162 game season after 6 games.
I love the April panic. I plan to make it a yearly tradition the rest of my life.
Yes.
They can't hit. I don't care if it's cold. They suck. Future me, probably.
Probably, yeah.
All right, my friend. We'll
take
see
it
you
easy.
Next
yep.
time.
Bears.
Bears.
You've been meatballed.
I think there are only 3 things that America will be known for 2,000 years from now when they study this civilization: the Constitution, jazz music, and baseball. They're the 3 most beautifully designed things this culture has ever produced.